प्रचोदयात्। शांति शांति शांति।
साई राम डियर लिसनर्स एंड वेलकम टू अनदर एपिसोड ऑफ रेडियो साई स्टडी सर्कल। दिस इज द 8th एपिसोड ऑफ दिस सीरीज विच वी स्टार्टेड इन सितंबर 2010. And it has been really a very educative and elevating experience for all of us who are part of this program, and we really thank Bhagwan for this opportunity. What has also inspired us, dear listeners, is your positive feedback time and again. For instance, after the previous study circle, which was on the theme Liking Swami versus Loving Swami, Dr. Sarika Jain from New Delhi, she wrote saying, "The discussion was truly revealing in the sense that we realized how inauthentic our devotion is for Baba, as it is limited to merely obtaining happiness for ourselves through his worship. You have strongly brought out an invaluable message through the discussion, and that is, to love him, one must follow his teachings, and that should transform the person. And now I am left contemplating, do I really love Swami?" So that was Dr. Sarika Jain, and there was Mrs. Purnima Srinath, who said, "This session made me understand that when the word love becomes a verb in our lives, it automatically leads to surrender. And surrender ultimately leads to oneness with God." Miss Akhila Sitaram from Bangalore said, "You have hit the nail on the head on practical issues. Imagine the revolution it can cause if only we transform the way Swami expects us to." And then there was Ms. Jyoti Ramchandra, who said, "It was one of the best study circles I have heard. You discuss the heart of spiritual life, which is practicing the teachings of the Master. It helped me to refocus on Baba." So like this, dear listeners, we did receive quite a few such encouraging mails. There was another motivating mail from Ms. Shobha Menon from Middle East. Maybe I will end with just one more. This was from Miss Asha Nigam, who wrote saying, "You are really conveying the message through excellent anecdotes. It is like reading a story with deep message, but conveyed with fun and ease. Do include more and more of his teachings in your program." Thank you so much, Miss Asha, Miss Shobha, Miss Jyoti, Miss Purnima, Dr. Sarika, and all others whose mails I have not been able to acknowledge here because of paucity of time. Thank you again for sending in your responses to this program. It really helps us in planning this program further. And now coming to Ms. Asha's request of having more programs based on Swami's teachings and doing this through anecdotes, well, that is exactly what we have planned today. So what is the topic for this new session of Radio Sai Study Circle? Well, I better leave it to the moderator to unveil that for all of us. As always, apart from me, there are three other brothers from the university, Amay, Sai Giridhar, Ganesh, in this panel, and the session is being moderated, as always, by another very senior alumni, Dr. G.S. Srirangarajan. So let's begin. Saram sir, please set the ball rolling for today's session.
Thank you, Bishu. Welcome, Amay, Ganesh, Giridhar. So it's nice to be back again today. So what's today's topic? Save our souls.
Save our souls.
Yes, it is SOS, but what it really means is Swami on Sadhana.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Today, in fact, as you rightly pointed out, we will be using just anecdotes of Bhagwan, analogies given by Bhagwan, very small but very profound messages given by Bhagwan through very simple examples to communicate what Bhagwan says, hands in the society and heads in the forest. Spirituality, in a very practical way, is all about being in the society, being in the world, doing your duty, but yet internally you're anchored in something much higher, which is God.
Being in the world, but not of the world.
Not of the world.
Right.
So, this is what really we're going to talk about today. It is Save Our Souls,
yes.
Swami on Sadhana, SOS.
Yes.
So, we'll start with introduction to sadhana, but a small caveat here, especially when we talk of examples, analogies and metaphors. Again, let me use an analogy given by Bhagwan to illustrate this. Swami says, you know, when a small child is crying and not eating food, what the mother normally does is she says, look here, look at the moon there. You know, she tries to point out to the moon. The child suddenly sees there, and as he sees, the mouth opens and she puts the food in. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the mother says, can you see the moon over there? See, just above the branch, just above the tree branch. Then Swami smiles and says, where is the tree branch and where is the moon?
Yes.
They are miles and miles apart. So Bhagwan says, even analogies are such, they should not be stretched too far trying to analyze and look into the nitty-gritty, but we need to grasp the message from these examples.
Yeah, just as a tool, immediately.
Yeah, in fact, every tool has its role, right? What a screwdriver does, some other tool cannot do.
Yes.
So in a similar way, every analogy has its role to perform.
Yes.
So Gita, why don't you get started? Let's first discuss about the initial introduction to sadhana. What really is sadhana? In this context, can you give an example that Bhagwan has given?
So before that, I would like to bring to our memory one experience every devotee who comes to Prashanthi Nilayam will definitely have. As he drives down from, you know, the railway station road towards the Prashanthi Ashram, there is one experience which he cannot miss. That is that? Dogs chasing his car.
Oh my, I've also had that.
Right? So as we go, we often see that dogs invariably chase our car, they bark at us, and one would always wonder why they do that.
Where devotees come here, man comes here in search of God, and here you have a dog chasing man.
Yeah, devotees come chasing God, and you have dogs chasing the devotees here. And the most unique aspect of Bhagwan has always been that even the smallest things that happens in our life, Bhagwan used to, you know, pull out the most profound meaning out of it and give it in a most simple and sweet way to all of us. In fact, even if you think about these dogs chasing us, one would wonder, what are they chasing at all? Because the cars are going at such a speed, they know they can never catch up with them. And even if they catch up, if you have ever tried to, you know, stop the vehicle because they are chasing, which we did sometimes, and they will look at you as though, why are you stopping the vehicle for? What are you stopping the vehicle for? They themselves don't know what they are chasing about. Why are they chasing? They do not know these things. One would wonder if even man in this world is like that. Does he know what is he chasing behind? Why is he going behind things that he is going behind today? So sadhana is all about giving that right direction and perspective to man.
Very true, Giridhar.
And of course, Swami used to give this beautiful example of a dog panting. When Swami saw a dog panting, he would say that, look at this dog. It has simply run hither and thither without knowing where its goal is. And, you know, just being restless, running around here and there and panting as though it has done a lot of work, right? So Swami says sadhana should not be like that. Mm. It is not about labor. It is not about aimless wander. The goal of sadhana is God. Goal of sadhana is love. Yes. Swami always says that God is bhava priya.
Yes.
It is not about running around and labor and, you know, what kind of activities you do. But it is a feeling behind the action.
One should not, and one should not lose the spirit.
In fact, this running around season is going to start very soon. Starting next Tuesday, we are going
with
to
Gram Seva.
A lot of running around. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'm able to so beautifully resonate with what Bhagwan was saying there. At the end of the afternoon, we have run around so much and we are panting and we are sweating. But have we really got the message that Gram Seva wants to really teach us? So I think
sadhana is more of inside than outside.
Yes. And as you are talking about running around here of Gram Seva, I am thinking of the running around that happens in the world all the time, the rat race. Yeah. And if you look at the modern generation today, now most of the times the youngsters feel that it is really unfashionable to think of God, you know, to sit down and chant, to sit down and say, meditate for 5 minutes or quieten yourself. It is considered, you know, very fatalistic. It is very ancient.
Old style.
But what we do not realize is actually it is the most beautiful thing to do, because it can fashion your life so beautifully. this is something which can actually bring that happiness that is lacking in your life. And talking about this, Bhagwan used to say how we are not able to see all our ancient practices and these spiritual sadhana in the right perspective. When Bhagwan used to give that example, now Dasara is around the corner, and Swami used to say how people laugh at pouring bags of paddy on the soil. So how can you waste food material?
Into the fire.
Into the fire.
Sacrificial.
Into the earth. Into the earth. So I says, what you pour into the earth, you get 10 times more in a few weeks. So only when Bhagwan explains it in this manner, no, you really can convince a youngster about the importance of all these practices. And so that is the importance of sadhana. And now when we talk about sadhana, you again have the people who are serious about it, they keep getting confused between, you know, which is the path to follow. I mean, is it karma? Is it bhakti? Is it jnana?
Yeah,
three paths. And once Bhagwan very beautifully said that karma, bhakti and jnana, they are actually not separate. Swami said, you cannot actually classify one from the other.
Okay. Yeah. In fact, yeah, I remember Swami comparing this path of action, the path of devotion and the path of knowledge, which is Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, to something like, you know, a tricycle or the auto rickshaws that we have here. Is you need all the three wheels for the vehicle to move.
Yes.
You cannot say that this wheel is more important. But at the same time, you need that one wheel which will guide the other two wheels. So each one of us have to have a balance between these three different disciplines, the karma, bhakti and jnana. It's just that the kind of importance that we are giving to any one particular. So probably in some individuals, it may be karma which is predominant.
The ratio is different.
Yeah. And in some, it is, you know, bhakti which is predominant. That is the wheel in the front, you know, which is actually guiding. So we really cannot say that, you know, it is only karma or, you know, I am a bhakti yoga or, you know, I am a jnana yogi.
Yeah, in fact, as you are talking about this tricycle example, I'm reminded of another very beautiful analogy that Bhagwan used to give, and it is to do with Mysore Pak, the sweet. Yes. Some used to say that this sweet has three aspects to it. One is sweetness, one is weight, and another is shape. Mm-hmm. Now, you cannot really separate one from the another. You can't have one part of the sweet which has weight, or one part of the sweet which has only the taste, or one part which has only the shape. You take a piece of the sweet within, and then slowly your tongue would have tasted it, the weight would have lessened, and the shape is modified. So, Swami said, karma is bhakti, bhakti is jnana. Mm. You cannot really separate.
Yeah, but as Amay said, possibly one of them may be predominant in people, and this ratio keeps changing.
Yes.
In fact, sadhana is a very subjective and a very customized aspect for each devotee.
Absolutely.
And the nice part of the master is he guides each one exactly on that very customized path which is meant for him.
Not only from devotee to devotee, sir. Even for the same devotee.
At different points of time. It could vary.
Stages of evolution.
Stages of evolution.
In fact, this is where I recall a wonderful example that Bhagwan gave. Again, he goes back to a mother and child example, and he says, there was a mother, so many children, and all of them were crying to the mother, mother, give me, I want red juice. And some other child said, no, I want yellow juice. And some other, child said, no, I want green juice. So he said, how can the mother satisfy all her children? And each child has got a different sort of crazy idea of juice. So the Swami says, what did the mother do? She prepared normal lime juice, which was white in color, and got different color glasses, red glass, yellow glass, poured it into them. And then all the children were so happy to get their color juices. And then as Swami always does, he said, this is exactly what Swami does. He gives us what we think we want. But in that hidden is the real sadhana which is, you know, meant for us. So very, very beautifully Swami put it that he guides us on the very customized path meant for each one.
So one way of looking at it is like sadhana basically should change, or I would say broaden our perspective.
Exactly.
And I'm reminded of a very popular Nepali song which sort of resonates with this understanding.
Oh, Ganesh, you sing also.
I would like to sing, but just I request you all to focus on the lyrics only.
Sure, sure. Go ahead.
It's just a one line. फुलको आँखामा फुलै संसार काडाको आँखामा काडै संसार. Now this line means, if we view the world with the lens of flower, the world appears like a flower. Whereas if we view the same world with the lens of thorns, the same world will appear like a thorn. As is the drishti, so is the srishti. Bhagwan often says that it is the color of the lens that we choose to wear that colors our perception of the world, and hence it defines your reality.
So I think basically what we understand from this initial discussion we have had is sadhana is a must. Sadhana is what really brings us closer to God. And Bhagwan always used to give the example of a bank account. He said that all the good that you have done in the past brings you closer to God.
Yes.
But at the same time, he cautions us that all the bad that we have done in the past is also pulling us away from God. So unless we constantly keep doing more and more good, it's like adding more and more money to your account. Otherwise, at one point, you'll find you're really going for an overdraft. So therefore, sadhana is a must and we really need to keep going ahead. But now let's go to the next step. Even before discussing about the process of sadhana, what are the prerequisites? Are there any prerequisites? As I understand, one important thing is, first of all, that affinity, that feeling to come closer to God, if you may call it attachment to God and maybe detachment from God. Unless this mindset is there, you wouldn't even think of doing sadhana. So, Ame, is there any example which Bhagwan gives about getting attached to God?
Yeah, in fact, I'm just reminded of one thing that Adi Shankaracharya says, you know, in Viveka Chudamani. He says, the three prerequisites that we need is Manushyatvam, Mumukshyatvam and Mahapurusha Samsraya. And guess what, dear brothers?
What does this mean?
Manushyatvam is getting human birth. So congratulations, you all have that. And Mumukshyatvam is that intense desire. That is the sadhana that we
need. Liberation.
For liberation. Guess what? Again, you know, Sai devotees, congratulations, we have that also. And then we have this Mahapurusha Samsraya, that is the guiding hand of a great
one.
You know, the Yuga Purusha, in fact, we have
We have God Himself.
God himself. So again, congratulations for a third time that, you know, we have even that. And so it is this Mumukshyatvam that is the fundamental prerequisite of sadhana. And in that he says, Swami uses the word joy, you know, often in Christmas discourses, Swami says, J-O-Y ante, Jesus first, others next, yourself last.
Beautiful.
That is God first, others next. So if this can be the, you know, the hierarchy in which we place all our activities in life, that is put God first, then put the rest of the world, and ultimately at the end, if at all, if there is anything left, then you put yourself.
In fact, as we are talking about this attachment to God and the prerequisites for sadhana, as sir was saying, the most important thing is to get our goal right, which is being attached to God. And Swami gives that very beautiful example of the river. He used to refer to Mother Ganga, River Ganga. Say how the river marches on towards the ocean, going through all these twists and turns and bends and boulders, but never
stops.
Never stops. And even once it reaches the ocean doesn't accept the river so easily. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of lashings for the river finally before it merges into the ocean. I think that should be kind of the perseverance and our focus on the goal. In fact, on another occasion, Swami said, if you're going in a train, say on a long journey from Chennai to Delhi, it's pretty long journey, probably it'll take you 2 days. Now, you know that Delhi is your goal, but you do not actually stop and get down in Jamshedpur, or you don't get down in some other station and think, okay, that is my goal. You probably will get down and probably do a bit of sightseeing, or you want to buy something or relax for a few hours, but you don't seek a home in any of these other stations. Your home is Delhi. Only when the focus is that I have to reach Delhi, will you persevere and reach your destination. And that is so important.
In fact, Bishu, there's another lesson from the river. If you see, it is so focused on its goal that for a moment also it will not look behind and see how many boulders have I struck, how many boulders have I overcome.
Only at the ocean.
In fact, if a drop would have ever stopped and looked back, it wouldn't have made it to the ocean.
Wow.
And in fact, the river, in fact, gives several more beautiful, messages and lessons that we can learn. That is, on the way, it uplifts several thousands. But it never stops back and looks at its own achievement and said, you know, hundreds of cities are on my banks. It does not feel anything because it is absolutely focused on its goal. So there may be hundreds who may take advantage. Mm-hmm. So in fact, one gentleman was saying, it increases in breadth. And in depth. Okay, so that is, its knowledge increases and so is its heart, yet it marches along till it joins the...
But truly all this looks very nice on paper. I really am inspired. But always this thing nags us that how do we develop detachment? Like Vishu was talking about, you don't get up in Jamshedpur and set up a camp there, but that's what we really, all of us are doing.
Yes.
Thinking this world is permanent. And it's so tempting. There is so much of excitement, joy. How do we really get detached from this? So Swami gives a beautiful example. He says, don't have your focus on getting detached from the world. Keep your focus on getting attached to God. And he gives the example of a seesaw. He says, when one side of the seesaw goes down, the other side automatically goes up. So if you start thinking of God, start loving God, make some place in your heart for God, you will find just like a fruit, when it ripens, the skin automatically gets detached. In the same way, Bhagwan says that automatically you will find the world dropping away from your priority list and you come closer to God. So this is a very beautiful example.
In fact, I am reminded of one very beautiful incident which happened with me. I used to write letters to Bhagwan, all of us, and I used to write as dearest Bhagwan. And in my 8th class, Swami picked up my letter and he just simply looked at the word and then he broke this word into the following. He said, dear rest. And the way he said it, when I keep contemplating it, and the way his expression was when he said it, it meant that, you simply call me dear, but rest of the world is only in your heart.
Rest of them are dear to you.
Yeah, rest of them are dear to you.
So beautiful.
Only Swami can do that. Dear rest.
Yes. Okay.
And so from that day onwards, I stopped using the word dearest and I used to write most beloved. Okay, and even for that, Swami said, beloved ante, be loved. So you be loved by God.
Fantastic.
And so you attach yourself to God.
Beautiful.
And
so dearest could also mean that if you're dear to God, the rest will be taken care.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but in fact, Swami's expression was, simply you're saying dearest. Yeah. The rest is only there in your
heart. In fact, Swami also puns with this word friendship. He says, friendship is actually, friend is like a ship. If you do not have the right kind of friend, who is more interested on the size of your pockets, how long his interest can be sustained by you. If, those kind of friends we have, Facebook friends and other social network friends, those are ships which will take you to the middle of the sea and sink right there. So those kind of friendships are of no use at all. A true friend, Bhagwan says, is God. God is your only friend. And he is such a ship that even at the sight of the worst kind of storm, that ship will ensure that it takes you across and lands you in the safety of liberation over this ocean of samsara. And there is another analogy which Swami used to give about friendship. He used to say that many people are excited or they feel proud or secure to say that my friend is a politician or he's in such and such position, he's so rich, so I'm proud of him or I'm secure because my friend is in a good position.
Yes, yes.
Swami says, just think about it for a moment. If you consider God himself as your friend,
yes,
how much more proud you can feel and how much more secure you can feel.
How much more emboldened you'll feel, actually.
Yes. I mean, you have the Lord of the universe.
Yeah.
The entire universe is his property.
Yes.
And he is your friend.
Definitely. Well, just as we saw in the seesaw example, which gives us a quantitative equation, attachment to God is inversely proportional to attachment to the world. Bhagwan also gives a very qualitative analogy of applying the oil of faith in God before cutting or handling the jackfruit. The jackfruit here symbolizes the world or samsara. It's a common practice to apply oil on our hands before we cut the jackfruit, which has the sticky pigment. You would have seen
this.
Oil. Basically, the oil nullifies the effect of the sticky pigment, which tries to stick onto our hand, making our job smooth while cutting the fruit. Similarly, if we were to enter the world and yet be unaffected by it, by its pulls and attachments, and what we said in the beginning, what Bhagwan expects, be in the world but not of the world, then we have to apply the oil of faith in God before taking up any task or friendship, whether it is professional or societal. So this faith in God, this faith in the God selves that we truly are, is essential to cut all the bonds that binds us down and suppresses the manifestation of our best potential.
So again, winding up this round about attachment, getting attached to God, one thing again becomes clear that it's not just loving God the way we understand, but also following his word, following his message. And Swami again puts this beautifully in the form of an analogy. He says, a patient who goes to a doctor is not just given medicines, but the doctor prescribes a diet for him.
Yes.
And unless you follow the diet along with the medicine, you're not really going to become truly healthy. So Bhagwan says, loving God is the first step, no doubt, very good, necessary, but not sufficient.
Not sufficient.
And that is like medicine. But following the message, following the teachings of God is the diet. Both put together really will take you closer to God. So that's the first step in sadhana. So we have really seen very good examples in this module. We have seen examples of what Amay talked about, Jesus first, others next and yourself last. We've seen the seesaw example and Ganesh talked about applying oil to your hands so that you don't get your hands sticky with the jackfruit. Giridhar talked about how to have friends but not like the ship which will drown you in the middle of the ocean. And Bishu spoke about the river reaching out to the sea. And Amay spoke about dearest. Swami is punning on the word that rest of the people are dear but not you. And then finally we talked about Swami saying how medicine and diet, love for God and following his message are equally important. But to tell you the truth, don't you think this is much easier for us because we are here in this very good ambience of Prashanti Nilayam? Yes. Or you know, when you are in a community where all the people think in this manner, it becomes much easier.
Easier.
But many of our own, you know, students who go out and other devotees I've heard, they say, see, this is easy in Parthi, but it's so tough in the outside world, which again, as Bishu referred to, is like a rat race. All the time working, doing your job, and people hardly have time for all this. Right. So don't you think company, the type of company you are in also makes a lot of
huge difference.
Significance
for
this. So can we share some of those examples which Swami has talked about, importance of good company?
In fact, Swami used to say, tell me your company and I shall tell you what you are.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a very important prerequisite to sadhana. And one of the examples which comes to my mind is Swami talking about dust, you know, when... So Swami says that when dust is in the company of wind, you know, it rises up and achieves great heights. But the same dust when it comes in company with water, you know, it just settles down and it becomes slush.
Yes.
So how a very, very simple thing like dust also, Swami said, it matters to it what company it keeps.
In fact, Swami also used to give this example of paper. Hmm. A newspaper by itself doesn't have any fragrance of its own.
Yeah.
But when you wrap a beautiful jasmine flower in the newspaper, after some time you will see that the newspaper still continues to have the fragrance of the jasmine flower. And Swami used to, you know, always point out that if you wrap a dry fish in the same newspaper, then the newspaper will also get the smell of the dry fish and continue to stink even after the fish is...
Possibly for a longer time than...
Possibly for a longer time.
In fact, as you are narrating this company, I'm reminded of the famous anecdote instance that happened with Bhagwan in Kodaikanal. You know, Bhagwan used to sit in the car as usual, but after a while, Bhagwan would come and join the boys in the bus, and then the people on the roads will continue to offer salutations to the car because Bhagwan says the car receives all the salutations because of the company. It had God as the company, and that's how even though Bhagwan is physically not there in the car, it continues to receive all those pranams. That was due
and
to Bhagwan.
And very humorously, Swami extended that example a little more. He said, now I'm sitting with you students and see, nobody is even doing namaskar to me. So your company has influenced God.
Of course, Swami also gives the example of iron and magnet, where God is magnet and man is the iron. And Swami says naturally man should get attracted to God because man also is divine, but because the iron is filled with rust and dust, it is not getting attracted to God. And we sadhana is that process that of removing that rust and dust. And Swami says laziness is rust and dust. We have to make efforts.
Realization is rust
and dust. We have to make efforts to be in good company, to get rid of this dross.
In fact, when we talk about company, we generally look outside. Swami says it's not only looking outside, you have to look within yourself, because we are a combination of many, you know, many qualities, good and bad. And Swami here gives the example of milk and curd. You know, some people think that if they are 95% of the time good, and maybe 5% of the time they may go off track, either because they don't have the strength to control the vagaries of mind, or they feel 100% commitment is humanly impossible. So they think, like for example, if the whole garden is full of flowers, one may fail to notice few patches of weeds here and there. Similarly, a sadhaka may become complacent while weeding out his seemingly negligible bad qualities inside his heart. Bhagwan warns that this analogy does not work in spirituality. He says that if there is even a little bit of curd in the pot, even if you put liters and liters of milk in the pot, overnight the whole milk will turn into curd. That is the reason why many spiritual aspirants are often found complaining that, what is this? I'm doing my bhajans, Vedam every day. I'm doing Narayan Seva regularly. Still, I don't seem to find a deep connection with Bhagwan, or whatever the individual may be praying for. Why? Because he or she has not given up certain traits or unpleasant qualities, which are like a spoon of curd. And Bhagwan, like a divine mother, she's waiting patiently, ready to pour the divine milk of love and grace. But for that one spoon of curd, which the individual is yet to remove, if only he puts little more effort.
Yes. In fact, Ganesh, it is also said that one drop of poison is enough to poison liters of milk altogether.
In fact, the company, that's why it's so important that we have everyone in our circle who is of good company. In the sense, once Bhagwan gave this example, Swami said that a tame elephant can immobilize and bind a tusker. Swami says, a tame elephant can do that. And Swami gives that example to say how a spiritually minded person also can turn around a doubter. So that is the effect of good company.
I think there is just no end to the number of examples. Really, when you look back, you find so many examples, but so profound messages.
But in this particular example, I just want to leave with one more point. Is there's something called Yatha Shakti. Yeah. It is not. We are not expecting everybody to be perfect. Nobody is perfect. But the best possible effort that an individual can put, you know, in terms of improving or refining himself, that is more important.
Yeah.
The effort is more important than the result.
So we have seen in this section on importance of company, you have seen the example of dust and water, paper with the fresh jasmine and the dry fish. We have seen the iron and magnet. We have seen the curd and the milk. And Ganesh, a very similar example that Swami talks about when he talks of milk. He says milk and water. If you add one glass of water to 99 glasses of milk, Swami says water will also become milk. This is like joining the good company. However bad you are, if you join the good company, you'll automatically become good.
Yes.
But you add one glass of milk to 99 glasses of water, the pure milk also becomes water.
Yes.
That's why he says ABC, run away from, avoid bad company, run away from bad company. I think now it's time we really move into the mainstream of sadhana. What exactly is the process of sadhana? When you talk of sadhana, the first thing that comes to mind, Bhagwan says, in Kali Yuga, the easiest sadhana one can do, forget the yagnas and yagas and all that, the easiest sadhana one can do is namasmarana, chanting the name of God. And I'm sure there are hundreds of examples that Bhagwan gives about namasmarana. So let's get going now.
But one of the beautiful examples that come to my mind is why we should do namasmarana. Or Swami gives this example that, you know, often we have in Parthi, we have these huge power cuts. And so to take that example, that in the olden days, they used to keep the lantern or the lamp at the doorstep, you know, on the so that it throws on the threshold of the house, so that it throws light inside the house as well as outside the house. So he says, chanting the name of the Lord is like keeping that lantern on the threshold of your
Being.
That is, it not only sheds light outside, but it also sheds
which
light inside.
Mouth is the threshold.
And Swami says that is the importance of mouth. It's the threshold of the entire body. It connects the inside to the outside.
And it is not something which can be done, you know, in part time. It has to be continuous. Because see, just as life is a continuous journey, and being sadhakas, we have to walk the path of spirituality. We have no choice but to tread the path, because the goal will not come on its own. Well, many people don't even take the first step in this journey. They just choose to sleep. If you wake them, they say that the path is unknown, the path is not lit, I am scared to walk on the path which is not having no light. These people will continue to sleep for thousands of births, because the solution is not outside, it is inside. And Bhagwan says that even if you have to tread hundreds of miles, you don't have to wait for the entire path to be lit up.
Yes.
At any given time, it is the next few meters that you need to see. And for that, even a small lamp is enough to give you the confidence to move forward, provided you have the will to move.
Yes.
This light of lamp, this light is Namasmaranam. When we chant his name, we get the clarity to see and move forward. And spiritual aspirants, being a spiritual aspirant, we just have to trust on the name and take one step at a time. We are sure to reach the goal.
In fact, Swami gives another reason why Namasmarana is very, very important for all of us. Mind, Swami says, can be a monkey mind, sometimes a drunken monkey mind, sometimes a drunken monkey mind bitten by a scorpion.
Yes.
Right? So, a mad monkey.
Mad
right?
Monkey, drunk and bitten
by a scorpion.
Can't get worse than that.
So, what it basically means is the vagaries of mind has no limits.
Absolutely.
And it can go to any extent. So Swami always used to compare mind to a genie or a demon which is waiting to eat you up if you do not engage in some work or the other. And Swami says the best way to engage this genie of mind is to erect the pole and ask it to go up and down until you have some work for it to do.
Yes.
Right? So Swami then gives explanation about what this pole is and what this exercise is all about. He says, The pole is the beautiful form of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And the process of going up and down the pole is the process of doing Namasmarana.
Wow.
So as long as mind is kept at rest, that is, Swami often says that idle mind is a devil's workshop. So when mind is potentially going to be idle, especially during those situations, Swami says, erect the pole of the beautiful form of the Lord and engage in this exercise of going up and down, which is constantly chanting His name. And that way, engage the mind in such a beautiful, divine process altogether.
Because empty mind, as Bhagavan says, we know, becomes devil's workshop. So, engaging the mind constantly at regular intervals is so important. And as you were, as Amay brother mentioned about power cuts and all that, I just remembered of one beautiful incident that Bhagavan used to give concerning this. Swami used to say, when power used to come into our homes from power stations, it comes through so many poles. It doesn't come straight from the power station. It has to come through so many small power stations.
Substations.
And then you have all these poles stationed at regular intervals. So Swami says, for you to access that power, it has to come through all these poles at regular intervals. Similarly, for you to get recharged, for you to tap into the power that is God, the grace that is God, you have to constantly, regularly do some kind of sadhana. And what is the best sadhana? Namasmarana.
In fact, that's what Swami says. Namasmarana is like the hotline to God. But many times, like it happens with our networks, we find the connectivity is not there. And then Swami says the reason is because it's not constant. And he gives the example of a chain, saying how every link in the chain is important. So he says if you give up Namasmarana for some time, it's like almost the chain is broken and you again have to restart. So therefore, constantly chanting or constantly keeping him in the mind is what really gives you this hotline connection. So we have seen many examples in Namasmarana. We have seen how beautifully Swami says that the mouth is like the doorstep and the light should be lit on that so that it lights both inside and outside. And Ganesh talked about taking the light with you so that at least the next few feet is visible and you can keep moving on to your goal. Giridhar talked about the genie and the keeping the form as the pillar and engaging the mind on that. And Vishu talked about the poles and also the example of the chain to show how constant chanting is very important. But sadhana does not stop with this. Swami has time and again reminded us that this is just the first step.
Yes.
But ultimately, you need to seek Swami within us. Because God, Swami always says, is not someone outside us, but is someone within us. So now let's talk about the higher sadhana, which is about seeking God within.
I remember a beautiful event that happened in 99. The MBA students were all seated there and they were all praying to Swami for an interview. And they all said, Swami, please give us an interview. Please give us an interview. And Swami, as usual, you know, with a smile, he told them, wife leke aao, interview deta hai.
Oh. And everybody would have a big laugh.
Have a big laugh thinking that Swami is cracking jokes with us. So they continued with their pleading. And Swami was walking away and he stopped for a moment, turned and asked, boys, did you understand what I said just now? Then he drew up a beautiful analogy. He said, your mind is your wife. Atma is the husband. When the mind is in perfect tune with the Atma, it has perfect understanding with your conscience, there is peace and harmony at home, which is our own self, our body.
Our body.
Right? But if mind and Atma are in two different directions, they go in two different directions, Swami punned with the word and said, the result will be diverse.
Diverse.
So Swami was saying, it's not just interview. Boys are asking for interview. Swami said, more important than interview is the inner view.
Yes.
And for getting that inner view, the mind has to be in tune with the Atma, which is inside us, which is the very core of our being.
Beautiful.
In fact, this talking about mind, Swami often, you know, he has given all his life, he has only given. And he is often given this green diamond and white diamond and three diamond and six diamond and nine diamond and so many kind of things.
You keep watching on whose finger you have.
We used to call it a grand slam and all that.
Yes, yes. So just talking about diamonds, Swami, you know, used to love diamonds so much because he used to, even that word diamond, he used it to, you know, explain. He says, diamond actually means die mind. That is when you are able to, shut your mind or able to crush your mind, end your mind. That's when it becomes as precious like a diamond. you know, and diamond sparkles forth in, you know, infinite light. Similarly, if you cut your mind, or if you are able to sink your mind, then the inner self will sparkle forth.
In fact, am I giving more clarity on what is to end the mind? Swami said that, see, we have thousands of thoughts in our mind going on. So he says through Namasmarana, focus it on to one thought first. And channelize, after some time, even that one thought has to be relinquished. And that is really the end of the mind. Where in that absolute nothingness, the mind is like a mirror which reflects the light of the Atma. And that love of the Atma is, you know, so felt by everyone.
Basically many to one and one to none.
One to none.
Wow. So when we talk about mind, there's one more analogy which Bhagwan gives. In fact, for most of the people who, you know, they have this tendency to, you know, blame God. Okay, God, you have created the world. So all this Maya is again your, you know, making. So why is it that we are so much trapped? Means like Ajnanis, we are trapped. And so, in fact, one of the devotees told Bhagwan, you are Maya Swarupa. And then Swami immediately answered, no, I am not Maya Swarupa, I am Jyoti Swarupa. I am the embodiment of light. And Swami gave the example, do not blame the sun for the shadow.
Wonderful.
Mm. And Swami says the shadow is coming because of the object. And this object is nothing but your mind. So the entire sadhana is all about nullifying this mind. The moment you nullify the mind, you have achieved the goal.
Fantastic. In fact, talking about nullifying the mind and purifying the inner self. I remember a very beautiful analogy that Swami gave on one occasion. He said, when you are boring and fixing a pipe to draw water from underground, you have to ensure that no air or water gets into the pipe, because there has to be that necessary vacuum for that water to come up.
Right.
So Swami said our inner self is like that, and our outer self should not in any way contaminate the inner self. Only when we do not allow the outer self to influence the inner self and keep the inner self clean, can we really connect and benefit and go inward. And that is where can we really, as Giridhar was saying, we experience the effulgence of the Atma, where the mind and Atma are together.
In that context, Swami also says, don't dig many, many boreholes in a very shallow way, because you really don't reach God. But, you know, just dig one borewell so that you're able to reach right unto Him.
That's why many times we are told why we should focus within. Means all the contamination and delusion is outside. And Bhagwan gives a very, very beautiful example. Swami says, when you're sitting inside a train, and when you look outside, and suppose there is one more train which is going in a parallel track, and your train is apparently, I mean, it is stationary, and the other train is moving. If you look at that train, you will feel as if your train is moving. And Swami said, that is Maya. That is delusion. So what is the solution for this? Look into your train. Look within. Automatically, it will be. So Bhagwan says, don't ask why Maya is there. Ask how to get rid of it. Don't try to analyze why Maya is there, how to break out of it, and
see,
all
it's like when a thorn pricks your leg, you're not going to sit and analyze how it got in there.
The most important thing is how to get rid of it. It's not analyzing the intensity of pain.
And the solution to that is only one, and that is Sai. Sai, which means see always inside.
See always inside.
And Swami always says, you go to a temple, you go miles and miles traveling through so many different ways, and finally when you reach the temple and you look at the idol, you immediately close your eyes. Because by default, man knows, the mind knows that he has to actually seek God within.
Inside.
And Swami gives a very beautiful example in this regard. He talks of the bird sitting on the branch, and there is a huge storm, and the branch is swaying, but somehow the bird seems to be very calm and peaceful. So one would wonder, why is the bird so calm when there is such a huge storm? Then suddenly the branch breaks. And what happens? The bird just flies away.
Happily.
Then Swami says it happened because the bird always was depending only on its wings. Though it appeared it is sitting on the branch, the branch was not its basis.
Yes.
The wings were its basis. In the same way, if our true self or the Atma is what we are anchored in, though we stay in the world, any problem in the world, we have this escape route of just going within. So seeking within is really the key. And what comes at the end of this, the culmination of Namasmarana. In fact, we have seen so many examples in seeking within. We have seen the example of the wife and the husband. Then we have seen the example of the bird with the wings, which I just gave now, about diamond. Swami saying, kill the mind.
The two trains.
About the two trains. And also about drilling the borewell and making contact with the self. The ultimate goal of all this is surrender.
what really we reach at the end of sadhana is surrendering to God. So now let us take up a few examples of what does surrender really mean, or at what point can we say that really we have been able to surrender to God.
Speaking about surrender, one of the most wonderful experiences that we had, I'd like to share at this point. Once Bhagwan had given an opportunity to some of us students to ask a few questions, and one of our brothers had asked this question, what is surrender? And eventually Bhagwan went on to give a beautiful analogy. He asked all of us, how many of you know how to drive a car? So a few of us raised our hands, and he said, how many gears are there in the car? We said, Swami, there are four gears. Swami said, do you know that life also has four gears?
He said,
first gear is happiness, second gear is sorrow, third gear is happiness, fourth gear is sorrow. If you are in neutral, the vehicle of life will go simply just like that without much turbulence. But the problem comes when you are in any of these gears, that is the gears of happiness or sorrow. In fact, he went on to further explain that even when you are in the first gear, he said, you're going at a constant speed. Do you feel any turbulence? We said, no, Swami. He said, when does the problem come? We all said, Swami, when we try to accelerate, we have to move to the next speed. So he said, if you directly move to the next speed, what happens? If you have to change the gear from first gear to the second gear directly, what happens? We said, Swami, there will be a jerk in the car. It might even collapse or it can stop if we, you know,
don't engage the clutch.
So he said, what is the key factor to transit from one gear to other smoothly? Swami said, the key is to press the clutch. He said, in the same way, in our life too, when we are happy, anyway we are joyous. Even when we are sad for a long time, we somewhat get used to it. But the problem comes when we transit from moments of joy to moments of sorrow. And Swami said, at those moments when we transit from joy to sorrow, sorrow to joy, we must press this clutch of surrender. And that surrender really means, Bhagavan said, that both joy and sorrow are gifts of God for my own growth and welfare. If we have firm faith and conviction in this principle, Bhagavan said, this kind of surrender will act as a clutch, ensuring smooth transition in the various changes that happen in our life.
Whatever happens is good for me.
Whatever happens is God's gift for me.
One more form of surrender. In fact, Bhagavan was explaining the inner significance of Kumkum Archanam. Since Navaratri is around the corner now, Bhagavan explained that Kumkum basically signifies blood.
Mm-hmm.
And blood in turn signifies life. So, no blood means no life.
No life.
So, when a sadhaka is offering the Kumkum, he or she is actually offering his or her own life to the Divine Mother. Mm-hmm. Here, offering life means offering one's action, one's thought, word, one's will to the divine will. Mm-hmm. Hence, the act of kumkumarchana actually symbolizes the spirit of surrender.
In fact, Bhagwan once talking about surrender, Swami said that in a family, if there is a minor cannot have access to parental property. You know, he will not be given the rights to parental property because he's still not of age. But once he becomes a major, you know, then you have rights on the property of the ancestors, of your father. Swami says, that is what sadhana can do. Once you start doing sadhana, once you start surrendering yourself to God, you have access to what is your true heritage. You have access to the heritage of God. And another beautiful thing Swami said, if you keep saying that I, then you will feel alone. You will feel lonely. But if you say not I, but you, if you say to God, not I, but you, then Swami says everything else will be added on to you. That is what is surrender, Swami said. Mm-hmm. We have to learn that I should not say I should say not I, but you, Swami. Then very beautifully Swami says everything else should be added on to you.
In fact, I am reminded of another example which we often refer to in our awareness classes. And that is this concept of PN cycle. So P stands for prasadam and N stands for naivedyam. So whatever we are getting from God is the prasadam, you know, his prasadam to us. And whatever we offer back to him is our naivedyam to him, which in turn will come back as prasadam to us. So if we have this feeling always that whatever I'm getting in my life is the prasadam, And in turn, I have to surrender that back to the Lord, because that is what is my offering to Him as Naivedya.
We have seen very good examples. We have seen the example of the clutch of surrender, the kumkum, which actually symbolizes offering of one's own life for God, and becoming a major. Sadhana actually helps you to become a major and gain access to God's property and the prasadam naivedyam cycle. And I'm also reminded of another very good example Swami gives about surrender. He says there are two ways in which you can surrender. One is that of a monkey, the example of a monkey, and the other one is the example of a cat. And he says, if you see the monkey, when the monkey jumps from tree to tree, the young one actually clings on to the mother's belly. And Swami says, see, it is a responsibility of the baby to cling on, because as the monkey jumps from tree to tree, any moment the child can drop. So though the mother takes care of the child, the responsibility ultimately lies on the child. But he says, look at the cat. If you see the cat, mother cat holds the kitten very softly in its jaws, in between its teeth, without hurting the kitten. And here he says, when the mother cat moves around, the baby has to just relax, because it's the mother's responsibility to take care of the kitten. So Swami says both are forms of surrender, but in, you know, he means the cat one is really a more higher form of surrender, wherein you leave everything to the Lord.
It's a bit like, I think, Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. When Bhakti Yoga is like that cat, and Jnana Yoga, you know, it's all your inquiry. You hold on to the truth.
I hold on and take up the responsibility. So these are wonderful examples that Swami gives about surrender. And I think this is what the path of sadhana is all really about. We have seen the prerequisites to sadhana. We have seen the process of sadhana, where we talked of namasmarana, seeking within. And ultimately, all this should lead to surrender to God, because that's what life is all about.
Yes.
To realize that we are not the doer. We are just puppets in His hand. We do our duty, but ultimately it is He who is doing it within us. We are just His instruments. I think it would be very apt to end this study circle talking about critical success factors. Sadhana is fine, but what is it that will make it click? Are there some tips that Swami gives? Take care of this and you will be sure you will get results of your sadhana. So can we talk about such examples, Ganesh?
Well, talking of the critical factor for success in sadhana, the factors of patience and perseverance is very important. And Bhagwan explains that there are three approaches in which a sadhaka strives to reach God. First one is that of the eagle approach. Eagle, we know, just scoops down at a terrific velocity towards its chosen target, makes a quick grab, which may damage the target itself, or it may lose the target in its impatience to grab it. Many devotees feel that doing an overnight stunt of some Mahayajna or sudden intense tapas, or some sporadic act of seva will please the divine. Well, it is definitely not the path prescribed by Bhagwan. The second one is that of a monkey. Monkey has this whimsical trait of jumping from one object to other. It is never steady. It is never satisfied with one. Similarly, a devotee may worship one god today, another tomorrow, and on the third day, he stops the sadhana. A week later, he starts again. He basically lacks the conviction and steadiness like a monkey.
Hey, you're reminding me of me, myself.
Most of us are getting reminded of ourselves. But the third and the final approach, the approach of the ant, that takes tiny yet firm steps of conviction towards its chosen goal, is what Bhagwan prescribes. Only a steady and consistent sadhana can win the grace of the Lord.
In fact, Ganesh, taking a leaf from the monkey example that you just gave, Swami used to say it is very important that in order to find water, you do not dig wells all over the place. You know, some people go, start digging at one place thinking that is the best place to find water.
Right.
And they dig 5 feet, 10 feet. Suddenly they feel maybe this is not the right place and move to some other place and start digging for water again. Swami says this will only create hundreds of pits, but no wells ever be found. Right? So in the same way, Swami extends this analogy of this well to both guru and also the type of sadhana.
Okay.
Swami says that it is really not that you are choosing a guru. A true guru actually chooses his disciple, right? And the guru, having chosen the disciple, it is the duty of the disciple, whatever be the circumstance, to hold on strongly to that guru, which means dig only at one place. The other meaning of digging a well at one place is to dig deep until you find the fulfillment. That is, you find water in that place. Because guru is the one who decides what is best for you. And he will tell you, this is the right place to dig, or which means this is the right sadhana for you to do. Because he has the bigger picture in mind. He knows exactly what is right for you. He will ask you to do only that. But sometimes in our ignorance and inefficiencies, we start to question that very advice of the guru and start to look forward to digging for well in other places. And that is when we encounter pitfalls in life or failure in sadhana.
In fact, I am reminded of another very beautiful analogy that Swami used to give when we are talking about these critical success factors for sadhana. Swami used to say that, why do you use a mosquito net? You use a mosquito net to protect yourself from mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Suppose, when you put the mosquito net, there are already some mosquitoes inside.
They'll keep biting you.
They'll have a feast. So that serves totally counterproductive.
Yeah.
Right. Swami says sadhana is like that. In the sense that if we keep on doing all the sadhana, you know, like going to holy places, and as Ganesh mentioned, you know, the overnight excitement, flash in the pan kind of excitement to do something immediate and something fantastic. Swami said all the sadhana is fine, but if you have not cleared those one or two, three impurities in your mind, then there is no point of doing all this sadhana. If you have this anger, say, or if you have jealousy, say, I mean, you may go and bathe in any number of rivers, any number of holy rivers.
You'll only be polluting the river.
it doesn't help.
And even for most of us who are doing sadhana, many of us have got into a trap of living the lifestyle of watertight compartments. Like, meaning to say, I may have to play a role of a son, a daughter, an employee, a student, a friend, a mentor, a sportsman, or even when we take a voluntary break of doing 2 weeks seva in Prashanti Nilayam, where we do an absolutely selfless set of tasks with complete dedication. We are a different set of individuals depending on the type of role we take, yes, but we fail to focus. When I do my meditation, the peace and tranquility that I experience in those few minutes, when I do the bhajans, the joy that those sacred bhavams give me, when I do the seva, the expansion I feel in my heart, when I do a satsang, the wonder and delight I feel when I hear the Lord's glory, the relaxation I feel when I do my yoga, all these tranquility, peace, joy, expansion of heart, relaxation, wonder and delight, what happens to them to the rest of the day? Why don't we anchor ourselves with these powerful moments and carry them for the rest of the day? It requires mindfulness. It requires focus. And how do we do that? When Krishna told Arjuna to fight even as he thinks of Krishna, Bhagavan has explained this with a very beautiful analogy. Bhagavan has said that even as a driver is driving on a busy road, he may be talking, listening to a song, or even looking behind at times, he is always mindful of what is happening on the road.
On the road, yes.
Similarly, a sadhaka should be mindful and carry the powerful moments of sadhana into his work,
yes,
into every aspect of his life. Sadhana cannot be part-time. It has to be full-time.
Absolutely. In fact, talking about the mindfulness and training the mind, Swami once said, if there is a train moving at fast speed, you know, the train cannot be stopped even by a million hands. But what it needs to stop the train is just one button. With that one switch, you can actually stop the train, what a million hands cannot do. And Swami says that is what sadhana is. You have to develop that mechanism within you to turn inward. If we can attain that, I think then we are reaching somewhere in our spiritual path.
In fact, I am reminded of another very powerful incident that happened with one of the gentlemen. Oftentimes, and this used to be my question also, how do we know whether our sadhana is really, you know, taking us forward? How do we know whether progress is really happening? So in fact, one of the devotees had asked Bhagwan this question. Swami, how do I know that I am progressing? And Swami gave this another very beautiful example. He says, once you sit in the plane and the plane takes off, do you keep looking out of the window, you know, wondering whether the plane is moving or not? You don't. You just fully trust the pilot that having taken off, it will take me to my destination. So similarly, all you need to do is to take off. Take the first step of getting into the flight with the Lord. And that is that Mahapurusha, that we have this Lord, our Master, who is going to take care of us. Let us take that one step of faith and get into his flight, and then just leave it to the pilot, to the Lord of our, Master of our lives, to take us forth. So, in fact, this gave me so much of, so much of solace.
Clarity, yeah.
That all we need to do is actually, Swami, to look at Swami and say, Swami, I'm surrendering to you. You take care of my sadhana.
And don't keep questioning yourself, am I progressing or not?
I think we've really had very good tips for critical success factors. We started with do not be sporadic like the eagle or unsteady like the monkey, but be steady and slow and steady like the ant. Vishu talked about digging in, I think Giridhar talked about digging in one place deeper and deeper to tap the water. And Vishu talked about how we should not enclose ourselves in a mosquito net with the mosquitoes inside. Ganesh talked about being mindfully focused. And again, you talked about stopping the train with a single button.
Yes.
And Amay very beautifully gave us the example of how we really need not look for measuring our progress, because once you're confident you're in the plane for which Bhagwan is the pilot, everything is taken care of. I remember long back when we management students, when I was studying here, you know, one of those occasions, Swami was very upset with us. So we all had sort of gathered around Bhagwan. We were crying and pleading, please Swami, please Swami. Actually, what we meant is, please Swami, talk to us. But slowly the talk to us fades away and it's, please Swami, Swami, please Swami. Swami. And then at one point, suddenly, you know, Swami looked at us. He said, what? He said, please Swami. And then Swami said, please Swami. So we were wondering, why is Swami repeating what we are saying? But then, no, Swami so beautifully pondered it. He said, please Swami.
Please Swami.
Please make, you please Swami, make Swami make happy.
Wow.
Then Swami will talk to us. I think the sum and substance of all this is, please God. And that can be done only when you really follow, love Bhagwan and also follow his message. So sadhana is all about, as we have seen in today's study circle, it is first of all getting attached to God in some way through whatever means you feel is the right way for you, and be in good company, because company makes a lot of difference. And that is where we can exercise some control. And once having done this, we enter into the actual process of sadhana, which is to start with namasmarana. But do not stop at that. Move on further to seek God within. And eventually we'll find ourselves reaching a state wherein we really surrender to Bhagwan and realize that it is He who does everything. In a way, there's a beautiful analogy again, which we could sort of explain this. It may start with unconscious incompetence. Many times you are not even aware that we are not on the path of sadhana. This is an unconscious incompetence. Slowly move to conscious incompetence. At least we start realizing what we need to do, the gap in our lives, and the need for coming closer to God and moving towards our goal. Slowly we move to conscious competence. We realize we are doing it. That's what Swami makes us aware of it. And finally we reach the stage of unconscious competence. I think that is all. That is what really we all should progress to. Let's pray to Bhagwan that we are able to do this effectively, successfully, and reach Bhagwan.
One small misconception that people have is that those people who are doing sadhana are actually taking a lot of vows and they are under a lot of, you know, obligations and burden. It is like, you know, you say sad henna means you are sadhana, you're doing sadhana. If a person is sad, means he's doing sadhana. But this is an absolute misconception. Sadhana means typically a sadhaka will be very cheerful.
Swami always says, don't put up a castrol face. Be cheerful, be cheerful.
And many times Swami says, be happy, be happy. That is,
in fact, happiness is what everyone wants, and sadhana is the way to.
And Swami says happiness is union with God.
Fantastic.
Sadhana is the way to it.
Yes. Fantastic. I think we should end this session with Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Sai Ram, you just heard the 8th episode of Radio Sai Study Circle. The theme of this discussion was Sai on Sadhana, how to pursue our goal on the spiritual path. And this was discussed through the analogies and examples that Baba has given from time to time over the years. We hope you found this program useful and interesting. This was recorded in the studios of Radio Sai by the alumni of Baba's University on October 2012. Finally, dear listeners, if you have any comments, suggestions or ideas, please feel free to write to us at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sai Ram.